think failure is, when you say massive failure, you know, for me, like that word, that description, like it doesn't even like mean anything. Cause there's, for me, like there's really no such thing as failure. There's obstacles, there's setbacks, there's no's, but failure is when you stop trying. Failure is when you give up.
If you're ready to maximize your God-given potential to impact the world in a positive and powerful way, you're listening to the right show. The Top 1% Podcast is the antidote to mediocrity, where we're giving you the tools, the inspiration, and the mentors to clarify your purpose, maximize your impact, and influence the world. Here's your host, Trevor Blattner.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to this episode of the Top 1% Podcast. I'm so excited today to welcome onto the show Ian Koniak. With over 100 million sold at Fortune 500 companies, Ian is a leading expert in sales whose global client list includes Berkshire Hathaway, Activision, and Task Us. Through a massive commitment to alignment, vision, and purpose, he has held countless positions as the number one salesperson, including holding the position as the number one account executive in the Enterprise Select Division of Salesforce.com, a billion-dollar global company with more than how many salespeople worldwide now do you guys have?
We must have over 10,000. There's 40,000 employees now. We're actually up to 16 billion. We announced earnings yesterday.
Oh my gosh.
It's skyrocketed. Yeah, it's massive. Yeah.
And so you were number one in the Enterprise Select Division of that company, just for perspective. As a speaker, trainer, and an expert on sales alignment, Ian has led national training workshops for Fortune 500 companies, and his message has been shared in a variety of media, including several leading top 100 podcasts. So first of all, Ian, man, thank you for the time, and really excited to chat with you about all of your success and your success habits.
Great to be here, man. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, absolutely. You and I met not too long ago in Nashville at a workshop event. And really hit it off, because I think we think about things in very similar ways, you know, in terms of how we want to build our life in a certain way. We want to build certain priorities into life and make the most out of the time we have. So just really excited to get your perspective. If you don't mind, just to kick it off, would you just give us some background in terms of kind of your upbringing a bit and kind of what got you onto the path of high performance and sales success?
First off, absolutely. I do think we think very similar. You know, my philosophy is you have one life to live and you have to really do everything you can to make the most of each day and don't let someone else live the life you want to live, right? Determine your future. And I'm really fascinated by what makes the top 1%, you know, so effective. So kudos to you for what you're doing. And it's great to be here. I grew up, I had a good, you know, childhood. I can't complain. I feel very blessed. And I came from a divorced family. And my mom actually took me and my brother to California when I was 2 years old. So I was raised in California with my mom. And she got remarried. And, you know, my mom and stepdad really raised me. But my mom, in those early years, she was a single mom. And she had to hold multiple jobs, and she truly was an amazing role model for work ethic. I remember her working nights and weekends, and so she could support me and my brother. And ultimately, I mean, it never stopped, right? My mom she became the associate dean at UCLA, and she has written many books and is just one of the hardest workers I've ever met. And then my dad also had a business in New York. He was a dentist, interestingly. So
wow.
I'd fly back and forth between New York and California. But I had really, you know, good role models, especially, you know, being raised by my mom and seeing that work ethic. So I kind of, and she was big in education too, being a professor at UCLA. Mm-hmm. So I was really, you know, from the beginning, it was a normal middle-class family. I had gotten my share of trouble growing up. I kind of had a pretty easy childhood in terms of like school and played a lot of sports, pretty typical. And, you know, and that kind of started my journey. I went to school up at Cal and still really never really got in the path to like hard work and sales until after I really graduated college. I had a pretty typical upbringing in the LA area.
Mm-hmm. And you were the kind of kid that, things came pretty easily to, you know, just in terms of school, you know, and things like that. Highly intelligent. Do you think that was something that, was that a good thing for you? Or do you think in some ways that,
No.
You know?
I think it's a really good thing to be intelligent. That's what I say. I thank God every morning. I'm blessed to be able to have things come easy to me, right? Mm-hmm. But that's also a curse in some ways, because when things are easy, if you can get straight A's and not really have to study, that gives you a lot more free time to go mess around, right?
Absolutely.
So I wasn't challenged as much. So I really wanted to push myself. And sometimes you, when you have a lot of free time, you can go into a certain path of, you know, partying, right? Because you don't have to study that much. And I kind of found myself doing that quite a bit in my younger days and in the early years. The second thing is, it pushed me, because I had all these credits, these AP credits, I really only needed 3 years of school and college. So I went to go live abroad for a year. I lived in Australia for a year, and that was amazing. But I was just like backpacking and camping and kind of running around. I'd been to like 20 countries by the time I finished college. And I mean, it was awesome that I got to do a lot of this, these amazing trips, but I wasn't necessarily, because school came pretty easy, I was always looking for something to really test me. And so living in a foreign country with nobody and backpacking and going these like crazy trips was how I sought my, you know, meaning and adventure, because I didn't necessarily get it in school or from the traditional academics. You see people burying, especially in Berkeley, bury himself in the school. And I just, that wasn't for me. And it's never been for me. Life isn't just about studying. It's about living, right? So I think that started at a very young age for me. And it was really driven because I just didn't have that clear focus on, I want to do this one thing. I have to study. I have to go to grad school or get these grades. It was just like, I just want to live and enjoy myself. And it was great because I got to travel and it pushed me this life of adventure. It ended up helping me. When I graduated college, I didn't want to work. I was like, you know what? I just want to keep going. Right? I'm afraid to work. So I ended up living for a year in Venezuela teaching English. Right. So if things hadn't come so easy, I think I never would have done these other things to like challenge myself or push myself outside of my comfort zone, because I was definitely comfortable in school and doing all that. And I was like, you know what? I have to do something different. I don't want to be like the rest of the pack. And so I ended up teaching English in South America. And that was like my journey into this, you know, this new world of being on my own. And that was, you know, a story altogether in itself. But It's a great question, because I think my wife gives me a hard time all the time. She's like, you're so smart. Things come easy. And it's like, okay, great. If you're applying to certain things, that's good. But it also can be, you know, it can make people not have to work as hard, right? You can become slacker because things are coming easy. And then your discipline and your work ethic is tested, right? And that's what I found myself. I just did not study. I did not take college that seriously. And I think until I really was forced to start working in sales and really, you know, grow up in that sense, I feel like I just had it pretty easy most of my life. And, you know, it's good to have challenges, good to have adversity. And I didn't always have that growing up, put it that way.
Yeah, no, it's interesting, you know, that perspective of, you know, intelligence is such a great thing, but you know, you need more than just intelligence, right? You have to have direction, you have to have discipline. And sometimes those things come a little bit later, you know, doesn't always come right off the bat.
Totally. Yeah, talent without hard work, without direction, it's a waste. It's like there's nothing more disappointing when you see somebody so smart or intelligent and they're not applying themselves, or they don't like have anything they care about. They don't have something they're working for, right? Because then it's like, well, what are you doing to use these gifts God has given you? What are you doing with what you've been blessed with, right? And I think that was I was so like into me and just having fun and just doing things I wanted to do. It wasn't about like, how can I use my gifts or how can I really serve others? And, you know, it took a long, long time for me. I'm 40 years old now to really shift where I'm like, okay, how can I use these gifts to actually make the biggest impact on as many people as possible? And that's what led me to you and how we met with Brand Builders. So yeah, it's been a blessing and a curse, but ultimately I wouldn't trade anything. I mean, you don't want to, you know, imagine the opposite where things don't come easy to you and you have to study all the time and you don't get it. Like, if you're born with talent, you're growing with intelligence, it's all about how can you really use this to maximize the potential, like untap your full potential, not just your intelligence, but like, what can you do with that? That's kind of how I'm thinking now about it.
Yeah. And I almost look at it as a sense of responsibility in some ways, you know, that you, if you're given these gifts, whatever the gifts are for you personally, as an individual, I feel like it's you're responsible to use those in a way that contributes in some way to the world and the people that you're able to interact with while you're here, you know?
Yeah, 100%. I heard a great quote. I might be butchering it, but I think it was like, God's gift to you is your talent. Your gift back to God is how you use it, right?
Yeah.
God's gift to you is your uniqueness, something like that. And it's like, you want to really, you know, be grateful for what you have. And it's an obligation to do something with it. So that's kind of where I'm at now.
Well, I want to talk about your Venezuela experience, because that led you sort of indirectly to the sales industry, did it not?
Yeah, it sure did. Directly.
Directly. Yeah. Let's talk about it a little bit, because I think it's a fascinating story and gives us a little bit of idea of how you got, you know, into the place in life where you are now.
Yeah. So when I graduated college, I went to school at Berkeley, and they had an externship program where they send you basically to any country to go live for a year and work. It's like a work exchange program. And so I chose Venezuela, lived there for the year. And I think the fourth day there, I just started teaching. One of my students came in, like, and it was just like love at first sight. Yeah. It's not like it is here. This is a day English school. It's not like, you know, I was 22, she's 18. It's nothing like that. But it was it was like we were lockstep, right? Mm-hmm. We had an amazing relationship the whole year and fully fell in love. Both of us wanted to continue the relationship. And at that point, my visa expired. And I had a choice to make. Do I want to stay in Venezuela for another year and just kind of live in this, you know, this, I'm not going to say fantasy, but it certainly was, I was traveling, I was climbing mountains, I was living with native Venezuelans in the jungle. I mean, I did some such crazy things, and I could have stayed there for probably many years. But, you know, the reality was, I knew if we wanted to continue our relationship, we would ultimately not do it in Venezuela, because the economy there, I mean, Venezuela is a very dangerous place, and it's not something where we wanted to live and raise a family. So we said, if we're going to start this, let's start it, right? And so I said, don't worry. I mean, you got to imagine, I'm like, am I going to see you again? I have no money. I have to go back to the U.S. And if I'm not with you, we had Skype at the time. Now we're on Zoom, but like, I'm like, we will Skype every day, and we will see each other, and I will make this work. And within a year, I'm going to have you in the U.S. So when I got back to the U.S., I thought I was going to be a photojournalist. I'd been traveling around to a lot of national parks and writing about it. And that was really where my passion was. And I remember submitting some pictures to like National Geographic. I didn't get a call back. And then I'm like, and then I learned that like most of the photographers start freelancing. And I'm like, okay, do I want to do this, or do I want to be with my girlfriend and continue this relationship? I'm like, you know what? Love is the most powerful thing in the world. And that was more important to me than just pursuing like a passion and a career in photography. So I said, I'm going to work as hard as I can. I'm going to make as much money as I can. The only way to get her here is to put her through college and get her on a student visa, which would have required saving $20,000. Now, keep in mind, this is 2003, and I have $0 in my savings. I have to move back with my parents. I have no experience except being a teacher in Venezuela. Right? So I'm like, what can I do that actually can help me save, not only save the $20,000 for her college and you know, the tuition and whatnot, but also I have to save enough to actually bring her here, fly her here, and support us in an apartment, right? And put her through college. So that's a pretty daunting task for a 23-year-old. So I essentially said, well, what can I do to make that kind of money? And I remember I went to a career fair, and I didn't know what I wanted to do. And there was a company called Lanier, and it had a flyer that said, make $50,000 your first year, $80,000 your second year, and $100,000 your third year plus. And I'm like, okay, sign me up. Let's do this. And she's like, I remember the woman, her name was Sherry, was the recruiter. She's like, we'll get you in for an interview. Like, we can meet, you know, you can meet with the manager. We'll tell you more about the job. I'm like, what do I need to do? I want to do this. I'll do whatever it takes. And she's like, you need to listen to, you know, to what we tell you to do and do exactly what we say. So I get to that interview, and they almost laughed me off. And they said, you know, the guy's name was Dusty Leninger. He was a VP. He's like, you give me one good reason why I should even think about hiring a teacher from Venezuela with no sales experience. He's lived abroad for two of the past 3 years. Like, what in the world are you? Like, how on earth are you going to convince me? And I said, I will do whatever it takes. If I don't make this much money by this time, I will not be able to get my girlfriend from Venezuela. I don't care what it is. I have to do this. And I was absolutely like, unwavering in my, mm-hmm. Commitment to him that I would do anything I was asked for, right? You tell me what to do. I have the personality. I have the drive. Just tell me what I need to do. Just give me a chance. And sure enough, they took a bet and I ended up staying with that company for 10 years. I ended up getting my girlfriend from Venezuela through college, moved out within the year. One other thing is my parents, at the time I moved back, said, my stepdad told me, you have 1 year. If you are not out of the house in 1 year, you are basically kicked out, right? So they said, yeah, he said, we'll give you, we'll give you a place to stay for a year. You save your money, but you're gone after a year. You're an adult. You need to be out of the house. So I'm grateful for them for letting me stay with them after I graduated college. But I'm also grateful that they pushed me out and said, you have to do this because I'm like setting these deadlines. So it forced me really, really young to just establish this crazy work ethic. And then that had to continue because I was supporting both of us and continuing to pay for college. So I ended up, like I said, getting the job. And that job, I ended up, even when I was in my early to mid 20s, just in first year was a major failure, major challenge. And I can talk about that a little bit, but ultimately I persevered. And I ended up being their number one rep. I hit quota 42 months in a row, which still stands as a record for our sales, 42. Because most people, they get a big sale and then a couple months off. I did it it was just relentless with my work ethic. And that's what I was known for. And so it was like that year in Venezuela taught me what it means to like live life and to travel and to truly connect and fall in love. And then afterwards, it was like I was forced into a situation where I had to work and to save money. And, that's how I got into sales. So long answer, but that's all. Yeah. That's my background.
Wow. No, so that's such an amazing story. But I think the power of that story is when you're put in a position where you have no choice, we often will rise to the occasion, but it's just rare in life where we force ourselves or manufacture a situation in which we have no out. Because when we do have those situations, we usually perform, we usually do it.
Totally.
We have an unbelievable, we have an unbelievable capacity to outperform our own expectations, but many times you have to be forced into it. So have you learned, from that situation, have you learned how to kind of use that as fuel for further accomplishments, along the way as you've continued to be successful in sales?
Yeah, I think what you just said is really important. Like you can be forced where you have to do something, right? If you're starving, you're going to find a way to eat no matter what, even if you're required begging or going to travel, you're going to find a way that you're going to eat. Same kind of thing, right? So my big lesson, I think success comes to those who want it bad enough, right? Ultimately, if you're really, really want it and you know why you want it and you're willing to do whatever it takes, you're going to find success, period. And I believe we're all, there's different levels of intelligence, there's different levels of looks, there's, certain, we're born with certain gifts, but ultimately you can't replace drive. And that's getting back to our conversation. If you're not driven and you're the most intelligent, talented person in the world, you're not going to find success. So for me, what I've done is like, that relationship didn't end up working. And thank God, because I have an amazing family now and a wife who I wouldn't trade for the world. But, one thing that happened is once that relationship fell off, I found that like I always had to find a new why, right? Because after a while, when you're crushing it and when you're making a lot of money, right? And if your motivation is to buy a nice house and then you get the house, right? Okay, then what is your motivation? If it's to support your family, but you're pretty good at taking your family, then what do you need? So I always like recalibrate myself almost on an annual basis to say, what is it that I really, really want? Why am I going to be willing to go and do whatever it takes this year to reach my goal? What does that look like? Right. And so, even as early as last year, I bought a house last year in LA, and where I live in LA, it's not cheap, right? The house, I'll just share it. It was close to $2 million. And it was a way outside of our budget, way outside. I thought we were going to do like low ones, 1.3 was max. I told my wife that, right? Mm-hmm. And we just could not find a thing that we wanted in the area by the beach and that met our criteria for that. And it was like, okay, maybe 1.6, 1.7. We're like, we can't afford it. There's no way. And it was so discouraging. And then I ended up going to a mastermind with a group called Epic Impact at the time. And it was all visualization. It was like, visualize your life, visualize what you want, feel into that, see yourself there. And we spent literally 2 days just writing out, visualizing and thinking and sharing of what our life could look like. And I remember that night after that first day of the immersion, I called my wife and I was like in tears. I'm like, we're going to start, raise what you're looking at, raise it up to 1.8. I don't care if it's 500,000 more. We're going to figure out a way to make it work. And that was the year I finished number one and we ended up buying that house. Mm. And I made more money than I ever have made, tripled my income. And I was so driven to like provide this house. I even visualized the type of yard we have right now. And I swear I saw my wife planting, doing gardening, and now we're redoing our backyard. And we're like, the planters are right where I visualized her actually doing the gardening and having a vegetable garden. And it's like, how did this happen? Like there's these forces and, you know, we talked about think and grow rich and visualization, but like that really said, okay, there is something greater here inside of me. And it's happened so many times over and over again that now it's like, okay, I need to do something more with my life where I need to teach this. I need to teach people how to really tap into their greatest self. Cause it's something that it's hard to describe. And I know it's worked for me and it's something I do, but how do you get it on paper? How do you teach it? How do you convey it when there's so much just more abstract concepts here of like, what is visualization? What is affirmation? What is, you know, the vision and tapping into that? How do you do it? And that's kind of what I've been doing the past year is really trying to define what that looks like. And like you're doing with the course, I want to teach an online course, which combines like, here's how to sell, but before you even sell, here's how to get your house in order and know why you're selling. Because if you're in sales, if you're any, you know, entrepreneur, any business where you're really requiring, you know, day in, day out, like hitting it hard, grinding it out, really dealing with rejection, adversity, whatever it is, setbacks, like you just have to have that strong foundation of why you're doing what you're doing. So I think that's like the biggest takeaway I've always applied is like when things get comfortable and you don't have to work, that's when you're in trouble. When you don't have to be successful, be number one, that's when you take your foot off the gas and it doesn't feel good for me because I'm just not wired that way. So it's like, I always kind of, and I'm going through one of those seasons right now where I'm putting my foot back on the gas at my work because I felt like I shifted a little too much towards the helping and serving others where I forgot to, you know, to be true to myself and just do what I love, which is like grinding it out and like, you know, fighting for big deals and big contracts that I run with Salesforce. So it's an everlasting, like you do that every year. It never stops. Mm-hmm.
I love how you put that you really have to kind of recalibrate each year, you know, because I do think you have to hit reset and look at what is the big, you know, the massive goal that I've got to pursue this year to keep myself on course, keep myself motivated. And I don't think it's a coincidence for you that bumping up that expectation of the house you were going to buy ended up being your number one year. Do you?
Yeah, for sure.
I don't think that's coincidental.
I mean, it's really a dream come true, you know? And it's like, I like putting this pressure on myself. I've always liked being up against the wall, right? Mm-hmm. I've always liked like having, like being the underdog and just like, I can do this. Like, I don't know what it is. Even the relationship I chose, my wife's a Jehovah's Witness and bless her soul. She's the most amazing woman in the world, but it was super hard. I'm Jewish and our relationship was definitely not public for a long time because she's supposed to marry within her community. I'm supposed to marry within mine. And like I felt like the whole world was telling us we couldn't make it. Now we have a beautiful 3-year-old son. You know what? We have different views and philosophies as come with, you know, our upbringings, but the connection we have and the communication we have is so worth it. So even the relationships I've chosen and like, I feel like for whatever reason, I like putting myself in a situation where I have to like dig deep because if it gets too comfortable, I don't know, man. It doesn't feel good for me to just like be in that comfort.
It's interesting. You know, you study competitors, people that are competitive at the highest level. And I feel like many of their lives are that way as well. You know, I think of like Michael Jordan, you know, when he was at the height of his career, he decided that he wanted to stop and go play baseball, you know, and try to make it into the major leagues. You know, things were just a little bit too easy. He had reached everything he could. And then he comes back after that and starts over again at a later age in the NBA just to see if he could do it. You know, it's fascinating that's a common thread. You know, I also think of like the Navy SEALs, you know, they put themselves in these situations that are just impossible and it brings out the best in them. So, so let's talk about failure a little bit. What are just one or two things that have been made, you know, massive failures that you would consider in your own life and kind of what have you learned from those?
Yeah, I think failures, when you say massive failure, you know, for me, like that word, that description, like it doesn't even mean anything. Cause there's, for me, like there's really no such thing as failure. There's obstacles, there's setbacks, there's no's, but failure is when you stop trying. Failure is when you give up. Right. Mm-hmm. And I've never really given up. I'll give you a couple examples, right? I applied for Salesforce 4 times before I got in. I was in a job where I had 90 or 80 employees. It was a $60 million division that I was running at Rico. And I said, you know what? This is not where the future is. Software as a service and Salesforce. We were customers at the time. I said, I got to get to this company because this is where the future is. And that was almost 7 years ago. And I applied and they said, no, you've never sold software before. Sorry. And I couldn't get past a recruiter. And I applied again and the same story. And I applied again. I tried to leverage connections. I was going and it was like so discouraging because I'm like, I know I can do it. Just give me a chance. Same kind of thing when I got out of Venezuela, but this time for software. I'm like, I am the common denominator on success, right? This is not, you know, I'll learn the software. I'll learn your sales cycle, but you know, you can't teach like, you know, the intangibles that, that I can bring to the table. And finally, I found a guy, his name was Grant Wood. And unfortunately he passed away, but he was my mentor when I started at Salesforce. And he said, you know what, Ian, I came from the copier world. Cause you got to remember, I was knocking on doors, selling copiers, like really hard grind kind of transactional sales. Mm-hmm. Salesforce is very strategic. You're selling to large enterprises. You're changing the entire way people do business. And these are big Fortune 500 companies. They want people who've done it before, right?
Right.
So this guy says, look, I know you haven't done it before. And I know you're going to be some work for me to take on, but I see in you, you know, the qualities of a winner. I see an athlete will find a way to win no matter where they are. And this guy, like, again, it comes down to people who believe in you, right? So once you find someone who believes in you and they give you a chance, you're not going to want to let that person down, right? So I got into Salesforce, and that was the failure, I was rejected so many times, and I ended up just persevering. I finally got in. That was the first thing. And I would say my first year in Salesforce, I got a little bit lucky. I will say that. I ended up closing over $1 million deal. It was a couple $1 million multi-year contract. And I just found it through sheer persistence. I got so many no's, but I didn't know any better. That's all I did in copiers. It's just like, you know, call people. Like, we didn't know the meaning of no. And I did that with a CIO in a big hospital. It's like, well, like, I've never met a software guy. Like, it was almost like it was a blessing that I didn't have the experience, because normally, like, people are a little more, you know, these are long-term relationships. You don't want to burn a bridge. I didn't care. I didn't have a choice.
I'm doing it.
I ended up selling a big amount that year. But then the next 2 years, I struggled big time. That approach of like just activity brings pipeline, brings results, does not work in enterprise sales. It doesn't work in software. The way you sell the big deals in software, and I know this now having learned and been here so long, but it's not through the amount of activity, right? It's through focusing on the people, the projects, and the companies that matter most. So really trying to find somebody in a big company and navigating somebody who has power, understanding how to get to that person, understanding what, you know, personally drives them, understanding exactly what their company's faced with, doing research and how you can help the company mitigate risk factors and grow revenue or improve the way they do business or keep their customers. Like, there's all these big problems Salesforce can solve. And I was just focusing on like, hey, we got the software, we can do this and that, and kind of showing features and benefits rather than really understanding how to dive deep into a company's culture and how I can really impact and shape, you know, their biggest goals and solve their biggest problems. So basically I ended up being like 1 year was like 70% of plan, 2 years was like 60% of plan. And I was like so down on myself. I was so frustrated. I said, this isn't me. I don't know what to do. I need help. I'm sick and tired of this. And I literally was going to quit the company and go work at Microsoft. And I got a Microsoft job offer. Again, it comes down to someone who believes in me. I met my current, she's now our head of sales, a woman named Jen Legale. And I interviewed with her and I'm like, look, I think I'm just in the wrong spot. I think I'm in the wrong area. I want to change divisions. I think I could do a lot better in this other area because it was like a little more accounts. It wasn't these giant elephants. It was a little smaller companies. And she said, you know what? You come on my team. And she gave me a shot. And the past 3-4 years with Salesforce have been remarkable. So if I would have given up in that time, like when I wasn't successful years 2 and 3 and not switched over, I would have avoided. I mean, I've sold over $10 million just in the past 2 years, which again, puts me amongst the top elite in our company. And this year is looking really good too. So it's one of those things where like sometimes success is right on the other side of failure. And you just have to keep going. the last thing I'll say is, like, when I did switch over, that I lost my biggest deal the night of January 31st. And it was, that's the last day of our fiscal year. And that deal would have put me over quota. And I didn't get it. And I remember lying in my bed and my head was ringing and I was like screaming. And I was so, my self-worth was tied to my performance at such a level. And I'm like, something's got to give, something's got to change. And after that loss, I said, never again. I will never be in this position again where I need one deal. I'm going to do, I don't care what it takes. And I ended up joining a mastermind program that year. I ended up, you know, again, getting a mentor and really just investing, double down. That was kind of my journey to self-development. This was in 2017, January when this happened. So it's been two and a half years of my biggest years. And that year I did good. I finished like 97%. I was like right there at plan, but I still wasn't number one. I wasn't anywhere near where I am now. So there were the failures of failing 2 years in a row, which tries your patience. And then there was the failure right after I lost my biggest deal. I ended up closing a deal that was over eight figures for our company. It was over a $12 million contract. And so that happened right after. That's what led me to be number one by the house. So it's like the lesson there is just, you know, at the end of the day, man, failure, like if you can like fuel something inside of you that says, I'm tired, I'm sick, I'm disgusted with how I've shown up, and I am willing and able to make a change within myself. Like that's the big thing, Trevor, is really like, if you're going to fail, don't just keep failing the same way over and over again. Like fail forward and use your failure to like be a source of like internal disgust, right? Because if you say, I remember this feeling, I remember what it means, it can be like you hear stories about people who are homeless and they never wanted to go back there. And so, you know, or they were starving growing up or whatever. Like those are extreme examples. But for me, it was like, I knew I was underperforming and I wasn't hitting my potential and I was wasting the talents I'd been given. And I knew I was better than that. So for me, like achieving to my potential or pursuing my full potential has always been a driver. And you can't get that if you haven't had failures, because you don't know what the taste of, like the opposite of success is failing. Right. And so I think failure is always a really, really good thing, because you just got to keep going. And I hear it over and over again. People who just, you know, end up having their biggest year or their biggest success usually comes after some type of big setback or failure. So I would definitely echo that with my, I mean, every time I've had a big win, it's like almost always after a big loss. So it just makes you that much more hungry when you fail, you know?
Yeah, that's a think and grow rich concept too. You know, I think in the way they word it in the book is every failure comes with the seed of an equal or greater benefit. You know, and so there's some kind of a benefit or some kind of a learning experience or a leverage point within every failure that we have. We just, our job is to figure that out, what that is, right?
Yeah, totally. And it's funny, like failing, what does failing mean, right? If you, at the end of the day, failing is doesn't mean anything unless you just have given up and then you're living in your past story and you were afraid to go out and go for what you wanted originally. That's failing.
Yes.
Right. But like, I, it could be any aspect. I'm just remembering like when I was 26, you know, like I said, I after that relationship didn't work, like relationships can fail, but what does that do for your next relationship? When you know what you don't want or what doesn't work, you can identify signs of that and say, okay, you know what? We gotta nip this in the bud before it gets bad. I again was in my, after my worst relationship, I got cheated on by the girl who was in Venezuela. And that was a failed relationship. We lived together and it was like awful. And I literally, after that, I was super depressed and I was drinking heavily and I ended up crashing into a tree and almost like lost my life. I mean, it was a horrible failure by any stretch of the imagination. But that moment like was a wake up call. I started going to therapy after that and I stopped drinking and driving, certainly. And I truly did like learn from it, right? But there's people you hear about, they've had DUI after DUI or accident or whatever. I was fortunate. I didn't get a DUI. I somehow made it out. I feel like I've always escaped like without a scratch. But every time I've, you know, fallen really hard, I've changed. It's not like get up and do the same thing. It's like fall hard, get back up and change what you're doing.
Yeah. I mean, that's so huge. And to just recognize that change is possible and make the shift and move forward, you know? The relationship, totally. The relationship analogy that you use is really good, because I think I can't imagine being married now and not having learned from my previous, you know, failed relationships, because there's so many things you learn from those about yourself, you know, and about what you may or may not want in someone that you're going to spend the rest of your life with. So I think, you know, you got to look at it with perspective on success, but other aspects of life as well. So wanted to ask you about, I mean, obviously you're a very high performer, you know, you've been number one in your company in terms of numbers and have continued to be very, very high. What are one or two things that you feel like you do year in, year out that maybe separate you from the pack?
Yeah. I think I do things a lot differently this year and really in the past couple of years than I used to, but I've always had, you know, pretty consistent success apart from those 2 years that I shared where it really mm-hmm. did, you know, miss my number. But mm-hmm. things kind of I've always done that were not unique, I think, to what I'm doing now. Is every single year I would set goals, right? I'd always know what goals I'm trying to accomplish. And I'd like kind of outline what would happen if I hit those goals and what would happen if I didn't hit those goals. It's not just, I'm going to get in shape and, you know, exercise 3 days a week. It's like, here's what I want to get to in terms of my weight. Here's why I want to do this. Here's my, you know, benefits if I am this healthy. And I, you know, I've always really been big on like setting goals and looking at them on a regular basis. I think I've always also been really, and I'll just say like motivated, internally mm-hmm. driven by money. I think if you're mm-hmm. in sales, mm-hmm. you know, if you're an entrepreneur, you've got to have like, people say money's bad or, you know, you want to find your passion first. But I feel like if you know you want to make a ton of money, and you know why you want to make a ton of money, you're going to work really hard and you're going to set your goals really high and you're going to always be aspiring to do better, right? So I kind of always done that. Like I left Rico when I was making $250 a year and I had, like I said, 80 employees. And I wrote an article in Forbes magazine and said like the average enterprise account executive in Salesforce gets paid $300. I'm like, I'm number one in Rico, right? Multiple years in a row, running a $60 million business and I'm getting $250 and you have the average AEO of this company, I'm playing in the wrong sport altogether, right?
And maybe, that's exactly right.
I may be an athlete, but I'm not playing in the right sport. So I feel like I've always really strived to like get to that next level, no matter mm-hmm. where it is. Like that's something unique. Now, my day-to-day habits that I've picked up the past couple of years, which I think are really different than most people. So number one is I do a daily affirmation every day. So I have my vision and I have how I'm going to show up every day tied together. So every morning I say, I am the best of my mother and father. And I say that for a reason, right? Mm-hmm. My dad died at a very young age. He was an alcoholic and he lived a life where was the most loving, sweet man in the world, but he had his struggles. He lost his business. He was depressed and he kind of turned things around like the last couple of years of his life, but by then it was too late. And he died at 53. And, you know, I've always kind of carried that with me. I was like, I won't be like my dad. I'll be like my mom. And I kind of, that was a narrative I told myself, but then I realized like part of me, the passionate part, the loving part, the traveler, the adventurer, the romantic, like the heart part of me versus like the mind work hard part mm-hmm. of me is like all my dad, right? My mom mm-hmm. is like the work ethic and the drive and the responsibility. So it's like me saying I am the best of my mother and father. I'm acknowledging my roots. Mm-hmm. Then I say to lead others effectively, I will first lead myself, right? So basically if I'm going to teach and I'm going to inspire people for a living and go on podcasts and do what I ultimately want to do in the big picture, which we already talked about, I need to lead myself every day and set the example and lead by doing, right? Then I say to untap my full potential, I will set and achieve aligned goals, do the things I don't feel like doing and honor my time so I can crush it at Salesforce while building up my business, right? Mm-hmm. And then I say, I will use my gifts of energy, love, and authenticity to serve others and maximize my impact on the planet. And I say that every single morning, every day. And it's got vision in there. It's got how I'm showing up every day. It's got heritage. And that's been like a total like evolving and it continues to evolve. But I really do believe that the affirmations and like reminding yourself of why you're doing what you're doing, not just going through lip service, but like feeling into it, That's something I do every single day. The next thing I do is I pray. I talk about what I'm grateful for. I thank God for the things I have. Last night, I got to go to a Rolling Stones concert. I got to be with my amazing wife.
Wow. I'm
grateful that my parent, it was amazing. Yeah, I go on my Instagram, you can see some clips on it.
But, that's awesome.
I was like on floor level seating. And I'm just thinking like, this is amazing. And my wife and I are dancing and we're just like, this is life. It's living. And I'm so grateful I get to do some of these things and, you know, just basic things like be able to have an amazing home and my son and just so gratitude and a daily prayer plus the affirmations. And then I'll do some exercise in the morning. I'll do a stretch and I'll, you know, typically do push-ups or sit-ups, or I'll go on a run or I'll use my Peloton bike. I'll get an exercise. And then the final thing I do, this is my morning routine. I'll have a shake and I'll, you know, fuel myself with the right, you know, the right vitamins and minerals to start the day. And then finally, what I'll do is I'll go to my whiteboard and I do it every day. And it's like, what are the top things I need to accomplish today? And I will write out, here are the things, and I'll put in my calendar. And it's not about a to-do list. It's actually about like what would make the biggest impact today if I just focused on those things. There's a great book called The One Thing by Gary Keller. And he talks about, it's not how many things you do. It's the most important thing, and making sure you actually do them. Because sometimes your day slips away and you feel like, what did I actually get done today? And it's because you're putting the menial, nominal, just crap first, and you're not, like my most important things are moving deals forward, connecting with clients, making sure that I'm strategizing on how we bring value to our meetings, planning for meetings, doing meetings, setting meetings, right? Those kind of things, and versus like admin work or stuff. So all that stuff needs to happen still, but I think it's really important to level set at the beginning of the day and say, what would good look like if I accomplished today? And just really making sure your calendar, and because otherwise, if you're an entrepreneur, if you have full control of your calendar, it's so easy to let those white space moments just slip away and spend hours kind of on things. You know, maybe you're not even working. Maybe you're just doing errands or hanging out with the fam or friends in the day. And that's a sure recipe. So I'm really, I think, disciplined about like, you know, setting my day, setting my calendar, and making sure I'm prioritizing with the things that matter most. And that's kind of my my basic formula for my mornings. And it usually takes an hour, hour and a half. And I start the day. By the time I start, I'm already feeling good. I know what I'm working on. I know why I'm doing it. It just gets you in a really good mindset for going and crushing the day.
Curious, the affirmation that you do, is that something you do very first thing in the morning? Like right as you kind of are getting out of bed, you start the day with that?
I don't necessarily do that. I try to pray in the morning, even if it's in the shower, right? Yeah. Oh, the other thing I do is I'll put on a podcast or an Audible book when I'm going for a run, or even if I'm stretching. So I'll have like already my mind feeding with like positivity and, you know, good juju. The affirmation, sometimes I forget, honestly, and I'll say it towards the end of the day, or maybe I'll get stuck in the middle of the day and I'm like reminding myself, you know, why I'm doing what I'm doing. It's not like, I think it's important. It depends on everyone works differently. Some people like a real regiment, real structure. For me, I do all these things, but it's not structured, right? One morning, like this morning, I went and met some friends for coffee and I didn't do it, right? But I will. So it's like, I haven't stretched yet, but I will. So it's like, sometimes these things come in the night, but typically it's a pretty, last night I didn't get home until 2 a.m. So it was Rolling Stone concert and I was on a call at 7:30 this morning. So I'm not going to wake up at 5 a.m. and sleep 3 hours just so I can get my morning routine in. And that's at the detriment of sleep. So you kind of have to know, here are the core things I will do every day and I'll be consistent every day. And not like for me, if I put too much regimen around the order of things or what time or something, then I don't do it. I feel like it's forced. Whereas if I want to do it, then I'll let it flow in the way it flows. The last thing I do, I forgot to share, is I post a video every single day. I'll do one on Instagram. I'll do like a motivational video. It's between 1 minute and 5 minutes usually. And I just share my thoughts. And I said, you know, what can I do every day that's going to make an impact? And sharing, you know, just some of the stuff I'm sharing with you, but doing it in a more like digestible little bites and pieces. I'll just give a tip of the day every day on my Instagram feed. And that is also a way to serve and to give back. So you think about it, you're expressing gratitude, right? You're exercising, you're reminding yourself why you're what you're doing. You're connecting with faith and you know, you know, a higher power. You're serving in some capacity. So I think this whole, you talked about the miracle morning, but this is kind of my miracle morning. It's just like, this works for me. And I never did this like so disciplined until this year. It's something I started in, you know, the beginning of the year, and it's been a game changer.
So you felt a shift with it being in your routine in a positive way.
Especially the prayer piece, especially the prayer piece. I mean, I think if you just live for yourself and like me, and Like, it just feels icky.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I agree. I think that I think that connection to me, I always a connection to a higher power to me has always been a really important part of the big picture. You know, I mean, I think it just you start to realize that there's so much to be grateful for and so much to try to contribute to sort of pay that back, you know? So totally. I think that's right on for sure.
And why are you put here, right? Why are you put here? You're doing what you're doing. You're doing the podcast.
Yeah.
You're doing what you're doing because you felt, I'm sure, a calling that you are more than just your job and that 100%. You have a greater purpose and some gifts you want to share, right? So that is driven by faith. There's God, there's no one telling you you need to serve. There's something bigger in all of us. I think we're built in the, I'm Jewish, like I said. So when you say we're built in the image of God, it doesn't matter what religion you are. Ultimately, like this all can't just be for, you know, coincidence. And we're not just put here just to consume and just feed ourselves. Like it's about progress. It's about evolving the human race. And like, I just get so inspired by knowing, you know what, at the end of the day, if you're helping people and you're doing your best and doing it from a place of love and integrity, like you're serving God, right? You're I don't know, that to me has been really a shift that I felt in the past couple years. And especially this year where it's like, I can't ignore it anymore. It's too much. And I think if I didn't have faith that I wouldn't be thinking that way at all. I just would be thinking about me and serving myself versus like, you know, a higher purpose.
Oh, that's awesome. I'm glad you brought that up. Also, I wanted to ask you before we go, where can people find you on Instagram so they can check the videos out? What is your handle?
Yeah, it's Ian Koniak, IAN, like ninja, KONIAK. That's it.
Awesome.
My first and last name.
Easy.
Yeah, simple.
Anywhere else that you want people to go? I know you've got a LinkedIn profile set up. People can check you out on there. Your website is in the works, right? Is there another website that you want people to go to?
Yeah, I'm kind of in this interesting place, Trevor, where I want to build a personal brand and really teach and serve in a bigger capacity. But right now, I'm at Salesforce, and I'm you know, my time and my resources are being required to do my best there, right? So I haven't gotten the website yet. It's in progress. I just signed this week with the company to build and get my website. It'll be iankoniak.com. The other thing in the works is I'm going to be releasing an online course. I don't have a set date of when that's coming out. I do have the content and the categories of what I'm going to be teaching, but it's going to be an online course really centered around how people can untap their full potential, in which I'll share, you know, what's worked for me and for what I've seen from like other people that are really highly successful, high achievers. Combine that success habits, but also with sales technique. How do you break into big companies? How do you communicate? How do you do discovery to really get to the root of, you know, why people would buy from you, really in a B2B sales capacity? So that's another place where people are going to be able to find me. But for now, just go to my Instagram, give me a shout out. If there's value in what you're hearing or what you're seeing, just share it out, because I definitely want to help as many people as I can. And this is something I'm just purely doing right now to serve others, not to serve myself, because I'm in a full-time job already. But ultimately, I would like to have a business and coach and run training programs for salespeople. That would be a dream come true for me.
I have no doubt that you'll do that. There's a lot of opportunity there, and a lot of people that I think would need that, you know, to get to the next level. So it's exciting. Keep us posted on that. And we'll put the handle and everything in the show notes. Before I let you go, are there one or two books you might recommend to the audience that maybe are life-changing books that you've read along the way just to help get you to the next level?
Gosh, there's so many. I mean, there's so many different books. I would say it's interesting. We talked about Think and Grow Rich, but I would say Outwitting the Devil was a game changer for me. It's by Napoleon Hill,
wasn't it?
It's also a Napoleon Hill book. Outwitting the Devil, the high level is that it's really about drifting and the dangers of drifting. And there's so many people in life that just drift through life without, you know, an idea of where they're going, without a clear destination.
So
and
true.
That really rang true for me. And that book is just, I mean, it's just a game changer. I'm looking at my library right now, and it's like there's so much like motivational books that I would say. But the second one, and these are older books, right? These are like timeless. Yeah,
classics.
What I like about Napoleon Hill and the older books is like, they're studying human potential without the technology, without all the influence, without all the noise. It's like, what are the common traits of the most successful people? Mm-hmm. And that's what you're doing with your podcast. But mm-hmm. the second one I would say is How to Win Friends and Influence People. And that's a book called Dale Carnegie. It's by Dale Carnegie. And it's all about communication and effective. And I'll leave you with this, right? Everything that I've done, I think, in sales has been part of it, you know, powered by how you communicate with people, right? Mm-hmm. People don't know you care, or people don't care what you know until they know you care. Mm-hmm. And that's really powerful. And that's kind of been what Dale Carnegie teaches in his book, is really around, when do people respond? No one likes to be told what to do, right? Mm-hmm. When you're strive to become interested, not interesting. Mm. And the more you can really be interested in people, interested in your customers, interested in your spouse, interested in your children, interested in learning and developing yourself, that's when you become very interesting.
Mm. So, isn't that interesting? Like, that is, it's a paradox almost, isn't it? But it's so right on. I remember reading through Dale Carnegie's book, you know, whatever, 15 years ago, maybe it was the first time I picked it up, and it is timeless. You know, I mean, that book is timeless. It will never go out of style. Those techniques will always be applicable.
100%. 100%. Mm-hmm. So I'd say those two. There's countless more, mm-hmm. but those are
outstanding. Those are outstanding. And I have to confess, I have not read Outwitting the Devil. So I'm going to have
put that on my list. Put it on Audible. Get your next one. It is.
Yeah.
It's controversial. I'll give you a disclaimer.
Yeah.
But it's an awesome book. It's literally him, like, supposedly interviewing the devil and all mm-hmm. the tools he used to control people's mind. And the idea of what hell is could be, you're living on earth in hell because you have no purpose. And that's what drifted. And it's like, oh my God.
it starts to ring true, doesn't it? When you think of it in that term.
It sure does. He wrote it like in the late 30s, and it wasn't released until well after he was dead by his foundation. Mm-hmm. I think it was released, you know, 10 years ago or something, because it was so controversial. But it's really not. It's like, okay, mm-hmm. that is the definition of hell. Like,
yeah.
just living here, just existing, right? Mm-hmm. Without any meaning or purpose. Man, that's
And that's just what the devil wants, right? He wants to keep us all just drifting, just so that we're not affected.
Yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And it talks about how at the time it was nicotine, but the tools he uses, vices, sex, addiction, mm-hmm. like all, it gets into all these things and how they're used to like control the minds. And it's fascinating. I'd love to get your take on it once you have a chance to read it.
Well, Ian, thanks, man, so much for your time. It really was enjoyable, and we'll have to stay in touch. When your course goes live, we'll promote it on here so that people can get access to it, particularly anyone in the sales, you know, field, but anyone, you know, interested in getting to that next level, we'll just make sure that they get access to the stuff you're offering.
Good stuff, man. Well, Trevor, thanks for having me on the show, and thank you for everyone listening, and hope you have a great weekend, man.
All right. You too, man. Have a great weekend. Talk soon.
All right. Cheers. Okay. Take care. Bye.
Hey, everybody. Thank you so much for listening. And if this content is delivering value to you, please go to iTunes or Stitcher and rate and review us. That helps us build the top 1% community as large as we possibly can, so we can help as many people as we possibly can. Your rates and reviews really do help. Thanks so much, and keep reaching for your top 1%.
Thanks for joining us on the Top 1% with Trevor Blattner. Now continue the conversation and learn more at thetop1%.com. We'll be back next time to help you clarify your purpose, maximize your impact, and influence the world.